The Talking Points podcast is produced in partnership with Fee Michael Gibson and ClinicalTrialResults.org.
Hi, this is Serge Korjian coming to you live from AHA 2023. And I am pleased to be joined by Dr. Jeffrey Carson, who is the study chair and principal investigator of the MINT trial. Dr. Carson, welcome and thank you for joining us.
Thank you so much for having me on your program.
Dr. Carson, in the world of acute coronary syndrome, we're always looking for strategies that can improve oxygen delivery and reduce ischemic injury. And treating anemia with blood transfusion has always been at least theoretically intriguing, but the data has been quite conflicting. Could you start by giving our listeners some background on the available evidence and telling us what was the rationale for this study?
Sure. So anemia is very common in acute MI patients, and the indications, as you've indicated, are controversial. And it really gets down to that there were only three small trials that have been performed in 820 patients, and the results were inconsistent. In other clinical settings, our meta-analysis suggests that a restricted transfusion approach, that is with a hemoglobin of 7 to 8, was safe and had no significant adverse outcomes. But in the setting of acute MI with an ischemic myocardium, the hypothesis was that maybe these patients would benefit by more liberal transfusion by trying to increase oxygen delivery to the myocardium.
Interesting. Can you describe to us how you designed the trial to answer this question?
So we enrolled patients with acute MI, either type 1 or type 2, who had hemoglobins less than 10 within 24 hours of randomization. And then patients were randomly allocated to so-called liberal transfusion or restrictive transfusion. In the liberal transfusion group, patients received 1 unit of blood immediately and then enough blood to keep their hemoglobin above 10 grams per deciliter throughout the hospitalization or up to 30 days. In the restrictive group, patients did not get blood unless their hemoglobin was less than 8. And then it was largely at the discretion of the clinicians whether to give blood below 8. We strongly encouraged them to do so at less than 7, but in the end, it was their clinical choice as to when to transfuse. Our primary outcome was all-cause mortality or recurrent myocardial infarction at 30 days. Recurrent MI was adjudicated by a blinded committee. And then we had a number of secondary outcomes, including the two composites of our primary of all-cause mortality, recurrent MI, and then a composite of what we call unscheduled revascularization, readmission to the hospital, or all-cause mortality or recurrent MI. So those were our primary and secondaries. And then you know, we had a few very important other outcomes, specifically heart failure being one of the real concerns related to the safety of using more volume in a setting where there's left ventricular dysfunction commonly. And then we also looked at cardiac mortality, a finding that turned out to be quite interesting.
Okay. And what did the results show?
So, you know, the first thing is, who do we enroll? We enrolled the mean age was 72 and 45% were women. We saw big differences in the amount of blood use in our two arms. The baseline hemoglobin was 8.6 pre-randomization, and then 1 day post-randomization, it was a 1.3 grams per deciliter difference. And day three, it was a 1.6 grams per deciliter difference. And the liberal group received 3.5 times the number of units of blood than the restrictive group. So big differences. We were successful in implementing a transfusion protocol. Now, what did we find in our primary? Our primary, once again, was all-cause mortality or recurrent myocardial infarction. In the restrictive group, the event rate was 16.9%. And in the liberal group, it was 14.5%. That yields a crude relative risk of 1.16 with a lower confidence interval 1.00 to 1.35. Now, we had 57 patients in whom we had incomplete follow-up for our primary outcome, And so we imputed those results with that, and that was our pre-specified primary outcome definition. And the relative risk was 1.15, and the lower confidence interval was 0.99 to 1.34, and that p-value was 0.07. So when we looked at it with Kaplan-Meier curve, it was 0.06, the p-value was. And the last form of analysis that we did to look, we adjusted for baseline characteristics, and that p-value was 0.05. So, you know, very close, but did not quite make significance with our pre-specified definition of how we were going to analyze the results. In terms of secondary outcomes, death, the relative risk was 1.19, MI was 1.19, and death MI, unscheduled revascularization or readmission to the hospital was 1.13, but each of those lower confidence intervals overlap one, around 0.95, 96, 0.98, so just kind of missing. Now, heart failure, as I indicated, Serge, is a really important outcome that we were concerned about. And it turned out there was essentially no difference between the two groups. 5.8% of patients, participants in our trial developed heart failure in the restrictive group, the lower group, and the liberal group, 6.3%. So the differences were quite small and clearly not significant. Now, the most statistically significant finding was cardiac death, where the relative risk was 1.74 higher in those who comparing restrictive to liberal. That is with liberal being superior in that case. But as I pointed out, we did not adjudicate that outcome. So, that's a weakness of that particular observation. That's kind of what we found. There were two subgroups that were really interesting. Most of the effects seemed to be in type 1 MI, where the relative risk was 1.32 and was significant, where in type 2, it was the relative risk was 1.05. And in heart failure, interestingly and counterintuitively, the group that had a history of pre-randomization heart failure, the relative risk was 1.25 with a lower confidence interval, 1.02, favoring liberal transfusion, whereas those without heart failure, the relative risk was 1.06. So, you know, those are our results, and quite interesting, to say the least.
Very interesting. How do you think these results will impact clinical practice?
Well, the challenge is how do you interpret results that are borderline? And I think our point of view is that you have to look at the totality of this evidence. When you eyeball the forest plots, everything favored liberal transfusion. They weren't statistically significant except for the cardiac mortality, but everything favored that. We saw no evidence that restrictive was superior. And in the end, when you look at the confidence intervals, and that's how we would suggest that you think about these results, the confidence intervals, the lower confidence interval is 0.99, so no effect, slightly. But most of the effect that you see in the confidence intervals is a point estimate of 1.15, an upper confidence interval of 1.34. Those would suggest that those are clinically significant differences. And when you look at the absolute differences in mortality and recurrent MI, you know, it's 2%, 2 to 3%. That's a clinically important effect. So the last point to make there, Serge, is that we saw very little risk associated with liberal transfusion. So if we had seen lots of bad complications with liberal, then it would make sense not to go that way. But because we saw so few important complications in the liberal group, the weight of the evidence, we think, favors using liberal transfusion in many patients.
So before we conclude, what would you say is the take-home message from the study for clinicians who are treating patients with both anemia and ACS?
We would urge them, first and foremost, is look at the total clinical picture, okay? You should not be transfusing on a number alone. You need to be looking at the overall status of that patient, what their symptoms are, what's their vital signs look like, what kind of, are they having recurrent angina, and so forth. And we, our data would suggest that you should be leaning towards a liberal transfusion strategy in these patients, because it appears that they do get better oxygen delivery to the ischemic myocardium, and they appear to do better with very little risk.
Dr. Carson, thank you so much for joining us and sharing your insights on the MINT trial today.
You're welcome. Thanks so much for having me.